I want to talk about one of the more fascinating judges, I believe, in a man, Ehud. Turn, if you will, to the book of Judges and chapter 3. Now, the situation at this time, this is very shortly after Joshua has died, and the Israelites are starting to get into this cycle of falling away from the Lord, then being repentant, being saved by a judge, and then falling back into sin. And so the first one, when this happened, God raised up Othniel, who was Caleb's nephew, to save them from the Mesopotamians once they had called upon God's name once more. Shortly after this, we start in Judges chapter 3 and verse 12. It says, "Now the sons of," in verse 11, "then the land had rest 40 years, and Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. Now the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. And he gathered to himself the sons of Ammon and Amalek, and he went and defeated Israel, and they possessed the city of the palm trees. The sons of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years." This is a fairly powerful alliance of nations, Moab, Ammon, and Amalek, three of the most ruthless enemies that the Israelites would face in these coming years, and all three of them are under this one man, Eglon. So Eglon would have been incredibly powerful. He would have been wealthy. He would have had many men surrounding him and protecting him. When we see this man Ehud, it's in verse 15. And it says, "But when the sons of Israel cried to the Lord raised up a deliverer for them, Ehud the son of Jerah, the Benjamite, a left-handed man. And the sons of Israel sent tribute by him to Eglon, the king of Moab. Ehud made himself a sword which had two edges, a cubit in length, and he bound it on his right thigh under his cloak." It's odd that one of the first things mentioned about him is that he's the son of a Benjamite, but he is a left-handed man. Now, why would that have been significant in this time? Well, traditionally, at this time, most people were right-handed. And so, for the sake of a battle line, if you had mostly right-handed people, if you then had a left-handed person right here, those swords are going to get in the way of each other. And so traditionally, warriors would have been the right-handed men, and left-handed men wouldn't have fought in the army in this capacity because you wouldn't have been able to work together as an army in this capacity. And so what this meant is that when you went to go see a dignitary, when you went to go see a king or a prince, and you were to be checked, as similarly we do in airports today, they would have checked for a right-handed man's sword to have been on his left thigh and on his left hip. So they would check right here to see if you had concealed any weapons. Now, Ehud, because he was a left-handed man, would have drawn from his right thigh. And so that wouldn't have been checked. And so he's able to make this sword, really it's more of a dagger, 18, or a cubit is really just 18 inches. So this is not, you know, a great sword that he's just got, oh, it's length of his whole leg. It's a relatively small, short sword, and that would have been able to have been concealed when he went into the king. So already God has picked a man for a very specific purpose. Ehud is going to be able to take the tribute of the sons of Israel to Eglon, the king of Moab, and he's going to be able to sneak in a weapon. This would have been a pretty scary instance, to be honest. You're the only guy going in here. Because turn, if you will, or continue reading on with me in verse 17. It says, "He presented the tribute to Eglon, king of Moab." Now, Eglon was a very fat man. And it came about when he had finished presenting the tribute that he sent away the people who had carried the tribute. But he himself turned back from the idols which were at Gilgal and said, "I have a secret message for you, O king." And he said, "Keep silence." And all who attended him left him. So all the other Israelites leave. It's just Ehud. Everybody else goes and goes back to their homes. It's just him, and he's the only one with the king. Now, Ehud knows what his mission is. His mission is to free the Israelites from this man. And to do that, he's going to have to kill the king. Well, what happens after you've killed the king? You've got the entire Moabite army surrounding you, and you're just one man. It would have taken an incredible amount of faith for Ehud to have gone in by himself and to have performed this mission of God. Continue reading with me, if you will. In verse 20, it says, "Ehud came to him while he was sitting alone in his cool roof chamber. And Ehud said, 'I have a message from God for you.' And he arose from his seat. Ehud stretched out his left hand, took the sword from his right thigh, and thrust it into his belly. The handle also went in after the blade, and the fat closed over the blade, for he did not draw the sword out of his belly. And the refuse came out." It's kind of kind of gross, first and foremost. That's a really gross description, that this man is so morbidly obese that an 18-inch sword goes completely in him and the fat just closes over him and the refuse, literally the filth, comes out of him. It's a very disgusting image. But it's also, and maybe this is just the teenager in me coming back out, this is a really cool passage. I mean, if you had to make a movie out of a Bible character, Ehud would not be a bad choice. I mean, this is Mission Impossible right here, that he goes in, I have a message from God for you. That's a cool one-liner. So, aside, it doesn't really have anything to do with the sermon, but I've always thought this is a really cool passage. And so he kills the king, and then in verse 23, it says, then Ehud went out into the vestibule and shut the doors of the roof chamber behind him and locked them. When he had gone out, his servants came and looked, and behold, the doors of the roof chamber were locked. And they said, he is only relieving himself in the cool room. They waited until they became anxious, but behold, he did not open the doors of the roof chamber. Therefore, they took the key and opened them, and behold, their master had fallen to the floor dead. Oops. Ehud gets out of here, and nobody, we have no recording of anybody asking him a question. He just leaves by himself. And it's actually the servants that say, okay, well, the king must be relieving himself. That's why the door is locked. It's just a very odd set of protocol, because either these are absolutely the worst servants of any king ever, or Ehud was protected by God throughout this process. Because it says that Ehud, in verse 26, Ehud escaped while they were delaying. And he passed by the idols and escaped to Seirah. He escapes, and there's no recording of him facing any troubles with this. He's never questioned as to where he's going. He's never questioned after the fact why the king is dead. He escapes, and I'm convinced it is only by the grace of God that he is able to escape in this fashion. The faith that it would have required Ehud to make this decision to willingly go by himself and face the most powerful man in the region is incredible. But it also reveals something about Ehud's character that we see in these next couple of verses. Because it says in verse 27, it came about when he had arrived that he blew the trumpet in the hill country of Ephraim. And the sons of Israel went down with him from the hill country, and he was in front of them. He said to them, pursue them, for the Lord has given your enemies, the Moabites, into your hands. So they went down after him and seized the fords of the Jordan opposite Moab and did not allow anyone to cross. They struck down at that time about 10,000 Moabites, all robust and valiant men, and no one escaped. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land was undisturbed for 80 years. I think even in just these brief passages, we see a lot about the character of a man like Ehud. We see first off that God will use us no matter our abilities. Turn, if you will, with me to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4 and in verse 10. Peter here is specifically talking about spiritual gifts, but I think there's a broader lesson to be applied here to all of us who have talents and abilities and gifts from God, because everything that we have is a gift from God. And so Peter, in 1 Peter 4 verse 10, says, as each one has received a special gift, employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Paul echoes this thought in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, Paul, also speaking again of spiritual gifts, says in the fourth verse of 1 Corinthians 12, now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are varieties of ministries and the same Lord. There are varieties of effects, but the same God who works all things in all persons. What we see is that Ehud was clearly a man of talent. We see, first off, that he was clearly a man of guile. He was able to sneak his way into this situation. He was able to fool what, if he's controlling three of the most powerful nations of the world, he's clearly a smart man, Eglon is. And so he's able to sneak his way past this. He's able to use his guile and his intelligence to assassinate this king. He's clearly a man of foresight. Because when we see, he's already prepared the sons of Israel that upon the completion of this mission, they're going to come from the hill country of Ephraim, and they are going to attack the Moabites, and they are going to break them. We see that he's left-handed, which in of itself you wouldn't think was a gift. But in this case, God is able to use a man that you wouldn't have first thought of, a left-handed man who traditionally would not have been a warrior. But he's able to use this man's ability. But above all, Ehud is a man of faith. Because turn back, if you will, to Judges. Because in verse 27, it says, "It came about when he had arrived that he blew the trumpet in the hill country of Ephraim, and the sons of Israel went down with him from the hill country. And he was in front of them. He said to them, 'Pursue them, for the Lord has given your enemies, the Moabites, into your hands.'" Above all else, Ehud was a man of faith and courage. He was courageous enough that he was willing to listen to the Lord and go into the heart of the enemy by himself and perform a mission for God. And he was also the kind of man who was brave enough to stand at the forefront of the Lord's army. And he was a man who was faithful enough to say, "The Lord has given the Moabites into our hands." Not the work of Ehud, not the work of the super spy who snuck in to kill the king. It wasn't me, but the Lord has given the Moabites into our hands. We don't know much of Ehud, but we know that Ehud triumphed because he let God work. And so the application for us is that there are some of us who are like Ehud, who when we look at ourselves, we don't think that, you know, we don't have these God-given talents, these things that can be used to further the spread of the kingdom. You know, I'm not a great song leader, or I'm not a great speaker, I'm not this, I'm not that. But what I think God shows is that God can use anybody and everybody for the will of the Lord. And he has called us to do that. He has called each one of us to take time to analyze ourselves, to look at what we can do and how we can help the kingdom of God. There's no excuse for not being willing to fight the good fight. Ehud didn't let what would be considered in those days a deformity in being left-handed. He didn't let that stop him from realizing that if God wills something, I can do it. We similarly must have the same faith that no matter what our personal circumstances, no matter what our gifts are, no matter what kind of person we are, if we trust in the Lord and we have courage to use what the Lord has given us, the Lord will give us victory as well.